Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 13th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the author, climate hawk, and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you tonight?
Very good, very good. So, Mariah, over the last few weeks, there has been a UN sanctioned meeting on climate in a town which I think is properly pronounced Katowice, Poland. It is also known as the Conference of the Parties, or COP, COP number 24. COP 24 is proceeding in Poland, and the goal of this UN meeting is to continue to build a framework for the Paris Accord. So the Paris Accord, let me ask you, Mariah, tell me, in 25 words or less, what's the Paris Accord, and what do you think the guys in Poland are trying to do to make it go?
The Paris Accord. So that happened in COP21 in Paris. It was the same meeting, but it was a couple of years. This was 2015, I think. Yep, I was there actually for it, which was fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep, I got to see the Eiffel Tower, all powered by renewable energy. This is not 25 words or less. Sorry. Okay, so COP21 was where all of the countries came together and actually signed an agreement, and the United States was included. I think everyone except for, weren't there only maybe two countries, right? Nicaragua,
Syria,
and
Nicaragua,
Russia, something like
Syria.
That. Was it Syria? Okay. They were the only two countries that didn't sign it. And the idea was that everybody came together and figured out that we were going to keep emissions below 2 degrees Celsius, and this is how we're going to do it. And it was non-binding, but there's some peer pressure going on to keep people sticking to their goals. And of course, then Trump backed out of it. That's the famous Paris Agreement that Trump backed out of.
Well, the
so, and we know he was there this weekend, right? I mean, for the COP24. No.
No. And I think that you touched on the magic of the Paris Accord was that everything was voluntary. Countries declared what carbon emissions they would achieve and volunteered to do it. So there was no coercion at all. But part of the deal was that there would be an honest accounting as to whether or not people lived up to their promises, right? And so I think that what's going on in Poland right now is continuing work to lay the ground rules about how carbon emissions will be measured in all these different countries, whether or not they get credit for their fulfilling their promises, right? Something like that.
Right. And I mean, in fact, it was supposed to be ratcheted up too. Each time the Conference of the Parties occurs, they're sort of supposed to kind of keep increasing the targets that countries set to sort of go after this in ways that actually can help us stay below 2 degrees Celsius.
And that buzzword, this is a business that's full of buzzwords, but that was called increasing ambition. Right. So all the countries would make a promise and say, we're going to, and President Obama, bless his name, made promises that what the United States would do. And then it was supposed to come back in 5 years, increase that ambition, to increase the promises as things worked out.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of what's going on. The goal of the United Nations meeting, where most of the world is committed to these kinds of goals. But as you said, the United States has embarrassingly enough, and we hope for a short time, but embarrassingly enough, pulled out of that.
And although we should clarify that the way that the agreement was set up, the United States cannot actually pull out of it until, I think it's, I want to say it's the year, it might be 2020, it's sometime in the year before the election. So they knew that we have a government that swings back and forth, and so they built in sort of a protection so that we can't officially remove ourselves from the agreement until a couple of years from now. That doesn't mean much, though, because if you are officially or not officially in it, but not actually doing anything you said you're going to do, well, you're not in it.
And I'm a little confused by that. I agree. What I saw somewhere that said the withdrawal of the United States becomes official on the day after the next U.S. election. But I don't believe that, because our so-called president did not announce a withdrawal until June of his first year. So it seems to me that the four-year clock is going to end up in June of the first year of the next president, whatever her name is, right? And so anyway, long and short of it, you're right that the United States gets to go to these Conference of the Parties meetings and be a player because we're still officially in the organization. We cannot withdraw, even though the people in Washington have declared our intention to withdraw, right?
Right.
So there's lots going on, and there's a whole bunch of sub-stories about this. One sub-story is that Poland has traditionally relied on coal for its power because I guess there are a lot of coal mines in Poland. And you're too young, Mariah, but if you think back to the Poland solidarity movement, my memory was that Lech Walesa was a coal miner. I mean, there's a lot of union coal mining jobs. I mean, this is rock rib stuff, much like the United States Appalachia. And the fact that this United Nations meeting on climate change is happening in the hotbed of coal country in Poland has lent a certain cloud, shall we say, to the whole proceedings there, right? Have you, I mean, I've seen a couple things, Mariah, tell me if you've seen anything similar, but there's considerable opposition to this meeting in Poland by the people who are digging the coal there, and the Poles do not want to lose the chance to utilize all of their coal, and the conference is being sponsored by coal companies. You see these pictures of coal exhibits of the glories of the coal industry, the mining industry, at the UN conference, which is kind of mind-bending. Have you seen anything around that, Mariah?
You know, I haven't seen much. I know that when we were in France, when it was COP21, the signs all over the city were clearly for clean energy and renewable energy, and the Eiffel Tower had all of these messages of hope for renewable energy, and I don't know if none of that was done in Poland. I haven't seen too much about it, but, you know, it makes me wonder, too, how they choose the countries. Do you know anything about how the host country gets chosen?
I would guess that they're chosen long in advance, and Poland has, I think what's happened in Poland, it has gone down a more authoritarian path in the last few years. And so they may have gotten the nod to hold this meeting back when they were more invested in the climate and the Paris Accord. And since then, they've done the equivalent of electing a Trumpian. And so now things are different.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I guess, so there's all this weirdness around this meeting, although the delegates there are working hard to, as we say, design the rules for accounting for the carbon emissions that countries are emitting. Some of the headline things that have happened is one particularly interesting thing. If you look at the headlines, it says, 15-year-old girl tells off the leaders of the world, right? And there is this young woman named Greta Thunberg. I think that's how to pronounce your name. If you're Swedish, please send in the correct pronunciation. My apologies if we got it wrong. But I guess have you seen any of this, Maya? This young woman.
This girl.
August, she just started sitting in front of the Swedish Parliament with this, in not going to school, saying it doesn't matter if I learn anything because the adults are doing, bad word all over the world, right? That the adults are not taking care of things, right?
She essentially said, what's the point of learning if I don't have a world in which to thrive in? So this is way more important than school, is what she said, which, we are talking about the future of the world. So in a lot of ways, it is way more important than school, even though I am fully on board, obviously, with
everyone,
school
as going an educator.
It started as a solo protest, but it sounds like about 20,000 children from around the world have joined her. It's in 270 towns and cities, including Australia, the United Kingdom, Belgium, U.S., and Japan, which is great. That's a big deal to have, it sort of spreading like that. And I mean, you read this, I haven't seen any video clips of this girl, but I really want to see it. But I guess she basically told the UN world leaders that they're behaving like irresponsible children, which is just awesome. She sounds really eloquent. She said another sort of soundbite I read from her was that she basically said for 25 years, countless people have come to the UN climate conferences begging our world leaders to stop emissions. And she said, that's not working. The emissions are continuing to rise. So she said, I'm not going to beg world leaders to care for our future. I'm going to let them know that it's coming, whether they like it not or not. And since they are behaving like children, we have to do something about it.
Wow.
So she said that. I mean, she said that in front of the UN. I'm pretty sure she said that in front of the whole conference. So,
I mean, it's remarkable because I was trying to figure out why a 15-year-old girl got put up in a girl. That's a bad young woman, right? Could put up
climate
in front
activist.
Of this. Yeah, but it turns out she's a climate activist. She's got the bearing. She's instigated this worldwide movement. And I'll let you, Mariah, tell the ancestral hook to the whole thing as to what makes it fascinating, because.
Yeah. So Svante Arrhenius is her. I'm not sure, but maybe her great grandfather or something like that. And actually, Thunberg's father was named after Svante. Her father's name is Svante. He's named after Svante Arrhenius. And Svante Arrhenius was the Nobel Prize-winning scientist who, in 1896, first calculated the greenhouse effect caused by carbon dioxide emissions. So he's sort of the grandfather of climate change. He's the first one. Calendar. But those, I mean, 1896, you know, that was a long time ago. And he was saying, hey, I see this, it's happening, and we should pay attention to it.
I mean, it is an amazing story. So I want to get my facts right. But my understanding is that Svante Arrhenius, who is famous for many other reasons, but he was the first one to do a climate model. And he basically did what computers do nowadays, broke the planet up into these big boxes, and you essentially pay people to do the sort of routine calculations. And he calculated, he was the one, I think, that talked about doubling the carbon dioxide level and measuring what the temperature is. Okay, so that, when you hear people talk about climate sensitivity, right, this is a big number that climate scientists study. It's a question of what's the reaction of the temperature if you doubled the amount of carbon dioxide. And I think that measure traces all the way back to 1899, essentially a hand calculation by Svante Arrhenius, and he got the number pretty much right in 1899 with paper and pencil. It's remarkable. And right. And I guess I just would go one step further, that if you've got much of a technical background, you've heard of an Arrhenius plot, right, which is essentially kind of a log plot where you plot, you know, one over the Kelvin temperature kind of thing. Svante Arrhenius did many other scientific things. Very clearly, very smart guy, very famous guy. Doing this calculation about climate change was just one of the many, many things that he did. And God bless him. So now his granddaughter is giving lip to the United Nations. God bless her.
Yeah.
So there's that. That is, you got to admit, that's pretty cool. Then
it's great.
The second thing is less cool. Okay, so this is the situation. If you remember, a few weeks ago, in October, we talked about the IPCC report, which again is another UN climate change organization. Is the IPCC creates these reports. There was a report that they put out in October in advance of this COP24 in Poland. It was put out at the request of the Conference of the Parties process. The report said basically that we have 12 years from now until 2030 to make major changes, or not just that things are going to be bad, things are going to be really, really, really bad in the not-too-distant future. Okay, so the IPCC report came out in October. So now fast forward to December, and who shows up but the stooges of President Trump, the Russians, the Saudis, and the Kuwaitis, is my understanding. And they, do you want to tell me what they did, Mariah, or do you want me to say it?
I think you might be able to cover this one a little better
okay,
than I can.
So these set of clowns went into this Conference of the Parties meeting in Poland and insisted that this report, this very important report commissioned by the United Nations just to give an update this conference on climate change, the effects, that report not be, in quotation marks, welcomed, which is essentially an endorsement by this Conference of the Parties in Poland, an endorsement of the report and the findings of the report that came out last October. Instead, what the United States, the Saudi Arabians, the Russians, and the Kuwaitis insisted it was that the conference just take note that the report was presented, which is basically almost criminal damage to the climate process in the rejection of good science. I mean, it is. I'll try to take the edge out of my voice because this is not a good thing the United States has done to deliberately try to confuse. And the United States did it in concert with the Saudis, who know how to use a bone saw, and Mr. Putin, who knows how to subvert people. Or poison them with uranium or whatever he does, or sarin gas, right? This is the company the United States went into this conference with and rejected a scientific finding. It's anyway, I'll put it down there. I'm not very happy about it.
Take a deep breath, right?
yes.
So what was the reaction?
Well, I mean, I think that the United Nations process has to proceed with unanimity, right? If somebody objects, then the whole thing stops. It's kind of like, you remember the Articles of Confederation of the United States before the U.S. Constitution? The Articles of Confederation were linked to 13 states, but any one state that objected to anything, nothing could happen. So that form of government just was unworkable because everybody had a veto, right? And I think the same thing is happening at these United Nations conferences because the UN wants the participation of everybody and everyone to come along. If someone objects, then they don't do that. And so to have as important a player as the United States or Russia insist that we not fully welcome and endorse this scientific report means it didn't happen.
Right. You know what, as you say that, I think there is some percentage that has to agree, however. I think.
Oh, really? Okay, maybe.
Well, because if you think about COP21, as we said, there were two countries that didn't make it. But I think there was a whole big thing where there was something with Russia had to be on board because that tipped our percentage, you know, population or something. I'm not exactly sure, but I'm pretty sure there is a slight. Maybe one or two small countries can say no, but for the most part, of course, a player like the United States has to say yes.
And then I withdraw my tone of certainty about everything.
Well, I could be wrong about
somehow
that as well,
it got driven through at the behest of the United States, which is an outrage. And that raises a whole bunch of questions, which I hope we get to in some future show of what is the moral and legal responsibility of entities that do these kinds of things, right? Because the United States is the Conference of the Party acted at the behest of the United States. The United States is acting at the behest of large oil companies. Anyway. So the other thing that maybe is a different note is that in a something approaching absurdity, the single public event hosted by the United States, or at least I believe it's the single public event hosted by the United States, was a panel discussing the virtues of coal and fossil fuels and how this was the future and the United States was committed to the full exploitation for the benefit of mankind of all the fossil fuel resources, which, again, is horrific. There's video online, I hope I can find it, of protesters in that meeting halfway through standing up and all having a belly laugh at the expense of the people, saying it was a joke, laughing, and then chanting keep it in the ground to try and protest this absurd theater that the United States put on in the Conference of the Parties. And of course they all get shuffled out, and then the meeting went on. there's a guy, the main U.S. speaker there was an operative in the Trump campaign, and I haven't seen it personally. I saw a tweet about it. I guess Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! Literally had to chase him down the corridor asking questions, and he had to scamper into hiding in his office to avoid answering questions about climate change from Amy Goodman. So, I don't know. So, the conference and the parties in Poland is not going to my satisfaction. I hope you can pick up. We are not pleased about what's happening there in Poland, but we are pleased about a different thing that happened this past week. Mariah and DR a few weeks ago talked about this. We had another podcast about it when I was present to talk about the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal is an umbrella concept to develop solutions that are at the same scale as the problem of climate change. It's being pushed in the new Congress by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to great effect, and they are now, last I saw, there were 33 reps that were supporting the idea of a dedicated committee to study these climate change issues. But much of the legwork for the Green New Deal has been done by a group called the Sunrise Movement. Mariah, you've seen you and DR talked about the Sunrise Movement, right?
We did, right, and all the good things that they're pushing forward.
And they're a group of relatively, they're basically kids. But this past week on December 10th, they again occupied Nancy Pelosi's office, which I guess is a favorite target. And something like 100 of them were arrested in a protest, a peaceful civil protest, but making the point that we can no longer fool around. And I think that it's heartening that the Green New Deal. So if you're listening to this, please call your representative and tell that he or she that they should be supporting the Green New Deal package in Congress as we go forward in the new majority, because this is a very good thing. It's got more legs than I thought, and it's kind of heartening to see that we're talking about a solution, again, that is at the scale of the problem that it's designed to resolve. So,
yeah, a lot of good stuff in that deal. A lot of decarbonization and renewable energy, push for renewable energy, and going way beyond just a carbon tax, but actually really aggressively reducing emissions.
And explicitly at the outset, committing to an equitable implementation of that, right?
So that
it's a big part of it is to try and redress some of the inequalities of the fossil fuel economy. And I mean, that's the right direction to go. That combines the organic wholeness of the solution to address the multifaceted problem that we face.
Right. We don't want any yellow vests. What is it?
The gilets jaunes. Gilets jaunes.
Yes.
That's my extent of my French. I apologize if I insulted someone's French. All right, Mariah, we got to put it down there. I think we've consumed. I'm sorry if I sounded outraged. I'm not sure that, you know, you got to avoid getting angry on audio because it doesn't. I hope it came across, dear listener. Please don't. I hope you've stayed with us. I'll try and remain cool. Anyway, we'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using most of the big podcast distribution apps like Stitcher, Overcast, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud. You should know that I've been checking out lately for various reasons which of those directories we're on, and we're actually on some that even surprised me. So you can find us most places. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's a patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. Thanks for being here, Mariah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.